Well, hey there. Welcome into another edition of What Barry's Talking About from Barry 360. I'm Dan Blakely. On this week's program, what's the city going to do with all that federal and provincial housing money it recently received? CAA is back with its annual Worst Roads campaign, your chance to weigh in on the bumps in the road that make your bones rattle the most. Barry Colts begin their playoff run this week. We'll get a preview. We find out more about plans to expand Sadlin Arena to make it more attractive for bigger ticket events, and CFS walk-in counseling is coming back to Barry. We get the conversation started after this.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. ArmorAll, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Housing still very near the top of the city of Barrie's priority list, with some monetary help coming recently from the federal and provincial governments. What will that mean? How will it help? Our Ian McLennan put those questions and more to Mayor Alex Nuttall during his regular monthly visit to the Barrie 360 environment.
Let's first off talk about the federal government came in with a chunk of change, to say the least. What was that money for, and why was it presented to the city?
Well, the money that's been presented by the federal government is around $26 million, $25.6 million, over 4 years. And that is to help stimulate more housing growth here in the city of Barrie. The federal government is looking for places like Barrie that are able to get the job done when it comes to housing. And so we've been, you know, happily a recipient of that. And we're very thankful that we're partnering with the federal government on that to deliver more housing for folks in Barrie.
Were there certain requirements to get that cash?
Yeah, there's about 680 units that we need to expedite as part of that agreement, and that's going to come from a plethora of places. Whether it's adding units to existing dwellings or trying to stimulate new development as well. And the final piece of that is also finding ways to speed up the process at City Hall to make sure that we're not lagging when it comes to the planning process or the permitting process through our Building Services Department.
Now, that seemed to play out when the premier was here recently, handed over $6.3 million to the city because Barrie met its housing targets last year, 102% more than what was expected of the municipality. What does that mean for the average person who lives in Barrie? When we hear so much about housing, what's going to be built, how soon? Maybe if you could lay it out, maybe, you know, layman terms.
Yeah, I think the important thing here is to take all of the dollars that are being presented, whether they're federal or provincial dollars, and ensure that we are using every dollar to stimulate housing for folks who wouldn't necessarily be able to afford it. That may mean rental in the sense of getting more rental supply into the market. It may mean affordable housing, you know, to ensure that those who are less fortunate in our community are able to be taken care of. And it also means housing that is built for sale. I think you'll see over the next number of weeks, we'll be rolling out different opportunities for folks to apply for if they're building houses or units in our community. We'll see where all that lands. But every dollar needs to be used to ensure that we're getting more housing for Barrie folks to move forward.
Is there a certain number that has to be set aside for affordable housing, or what sort of, when we talk housing, what are we going to see?
Well, I think in terms of affordable housing, you know, this is an item that's really did start this housing crisis, where there was no affordable housing being built for a very long period of time in Barrie, or quite frankly around the province, maybe the country. We are looking at this very seriously going forward. How do we get some of that housing built? Now, some of it's already happening because we're funding affordable units in Barrie, Bradford, and in Orillia as part of our agreement with the County of Simcoe. But we need to do more. And so affordable housing is going to be a piece of that. The other side is just to get more supply at large, right? More rental units into the market, to get more units being built that are for sale, to try to find a way to ensure that those units that are going to market are actually attainable for folks. Well, you know, it could be a young family. It could be somebody right out of university, your college or high school, who's working very hard. And today, the market isn't cooperating in a way where the wages that are earned are going to be able to afford a unit, whether that's for sale or for rent here in the city of Barrie for the most part. So our goal is to incent development in a way that the cost is reduced, and that those folks coming out of high school, college, university are actually able to get into the either rental or housing market.
Now, the province set a target of 23,000 new housing units in Barrie by 2031. Are we talking built homes or built duplexes? What does that number actually mean?
So what that number means is it is units that have been permitted and the permits actually been actioned. So the best way to describe it is, you know, in Barrie, we use the number of units where the foundation is in the ground and the basement's in, and it's been passed, you know, it's passed all inspections. So that's what we use to describe it. CMHC actually manages the data on this for the city of Barrie and the province of Ontario. And they use a little bit different in the sense that what they do is they go around and they spot check, okay, of the permits that are pulled, 80% of them or 90% of them are pulled, and that's the number that they're going to come up with. So it's not an exact science from the provincial or federal level. It is from the city of Barrie's perspective, and so we've provided all that information to the province and the feds.
To meet those targets, what barriers could possibly be put in the way? We know about the interest rates. We know about construction and trades and shortages, and it's not just Barrie. There's more than just what Barrie can accomplish, right?
Yeah, the macro is what's really hurting, I think, everybody at this point. And that being interest rates, as you've just stated, it's also the idea that we don't have enough folks working in the trades. It's perhaps not having the services on the right pieces of property to get those properties to market. And that's something that we're constantly working on at City Hall. And so there's lots of barriers in place. Our goal is to remove the barriers that we have control of. We obviously don't have control of interest rates. We don't have control of the number of people working in the trades. But everything else that we do have control of, let's make sure that process is the most effective and efficient possible, so that when the macro does change, when we do see lower interest rates, when we see folks choosing the trades in a meaningful way, that it'll be very quick to get that housing built. And I'll also say, you know, one of the things that I think that's really important, a barrier that's really important to address for the city, is the idea on development charges. Is there an opportunity for us to incent through you know, development charges not being charged for a certain portion of time? So I'm tipping my hat to you a little bit here, in the sense that if we are not seeing homes built in 2024 like we did 2023, and we're not, I can guarantee you that, and I can provide those stats to you. But if we're not, then how do we, you know, provide that short-term incentive to get housing built? It not only gets housing built, but it creates jobs and it keeps all of the ancillary organizations that are providing materials and supplies and people power, you know, the continued business. So I think that's one thing that we're going to look at going forward. I don't know if we can do it without the province signing off on it, but it's certainly something we're willing to consider.
But did the province not offer that already to developers in terms of breaks and certain that cities like Barrie were concerned that it's going to cost them a chunk of change, though?
Yeah. And so if you look at what the cost of the development charge bylaw is, so when you really dig in, it's kind of complicated, but I'll give you let's say the Coles Notes version. So when you go into the development charge bylaw and we say, okay, we need to, you know, build 10 bridges that are going to cost $100 million and we're going to build 10 sets of sewers, so that's going to be another $100 million. So you've got $200 million in cost to make these developments happen. The problem is when you reduce the development charges as a city, those costs are still there. At the same time, when you reduce development charges on a specific development, those levies then get levied against either other developers. So, you know, if you remove them on one, somebody else has to pay more, right, to cover those costs, or it gets picked up by the taxpayer, which is something we want to avoid and we don't want to see happen. And so what we need the province to do is to sign off on the allowance of a development charge break for a certain period of time that doesn't affect our development charge background study. And at the same time, I think that we need to look in a more meaningful way at our development charge background study and see if there's opportunities for savings. Like, are there things that we're doing that we don't need to do? Are there things that aren't necessarily important today, and maybe we can push them out a few years? And
so, but cutting red tape again, because I think the premier mentioned at the news conference that acknowledging Barry got some obstacles out of the way to make last year happen.
100%, and the premier and the minister, quite frankly, federally, touched on this. You know, we need the governments to be, a highway to success for getting housing built and jobs. So, you know, remind you, both of them talked about jobs as well. And not the impediment. And I think that they've seen that here in the city of Barrie. They see the attitude we have on trying to make sure that our seniors can downsize, that our young people can get into a home.
You challenged other municipalities to do what Barrie has done. And I know in an online article, I think by CBC, Barrie was compared with Burlington that had not accomplished what Barrie has done. Why did you put out that challenge?
Because it's important. You know, I think on the municipal side, we can get stuck complaining about the province, complaining about the feds. And that's not a real conversation that people care to have. You know, if you can think about being a parent of a 19-year-old or a 24-year-old today who's grown up in Barrie and they can't find a place to live, I don't think they want to hear governments fighting. I think they want to hear governments cooperating, working together to ensure that each and every person who has the dream and the hope of renting or owning a home here in the city of Barrie can actually achieve that. And we're not going to achieve that by complaining. We're going to achieve that by rolling up our sleeves and doing the hard work. And I think that that's what the premier and the federal minister want. And I also think it's what the people of Barrie want. And it's certainly what our council's demonstrated to date.
What Barrie's Talking About from Barrie 360, I'm Dan Blakely, joined by Brian Purvu, Community Relations Consultant for the CAA, which has launched another Worst Roads campaign. Welcome to the program, Brian.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
This is an annual rite of spring, allows drivers and cyclists to vent, I suppose, but it's also over the years reaped a few dividends in terms of road repair.
Absolutely, yes. The CAA campaign for over two decades has given decision makers from the provincial and the municipal level a snapshot on what roads the public perceives are not meeting their expectations, from congestion, potholes, poor roadsides, and timing of traffic lights to even pedestrian and cycling safety. Everyone's affected by the quality of our roadways, and it continues to make an impact and actively works to help make our roads safer for all. And we encourage all road users to nominate and vote for your roads and provide the results to different levels of government so that we can prioritize dedicated infrastructure funding.
An eye-opener for everybody, for sure. And I know I've talked to municipal officials after the list comes out, and, oh, we had those roads earmarked anyway. But I know there have been some instances where the CAA has been able to twist a few arms to get some streets and some roads moved up the list.
Yes, the Worst Roads campaign has had multiple examples and successes where governments have responded by prioritizing or fast-tracking road infrastructure projects. One of the biggest ones we had was Barton Street East in Hamilton, which took the top spot in 2022. And as a response, the city of Hamilton announced $9 million of reconstruction funding for road repaving and installation of active transportation. So it's successes like this which make us continue the campaign and which makes the campaign a success and, works to influence municipal governments and provincial governments to prioritize road infrastructure.
And you get a lot of input from people, don't you?
Yes, over 3,000 roads were nominated in last year's campaign. And, we continue to promote the campaign every springtime, the freeze and thaw period begins and you start to see some of the more of those potholes. And even with, people returning back to their normal commutes after the pandemic and congestion becoming a more prominent issue, we look at all road issues in this campaign and continue that dialogue with different levels of government in hopes of advocating for dedicated infrastructure funding and more attentiveness to the roads on our list.
We had a crazy kind of winter. I'm not sure there was much of that freeze-thaw you talked about, but enough back and forth that you may get a lot more people talking to you this year about bad roads.
In this case, yes, potholes tend to be one of the more prominent issues in the campaign, but we've started to also see more traction towards traffic and congestion, and cycling safety. And even according to our research among CAA members, 84% are concerned about the state of our roads. So it's still a prominent issue, and we continue to use this campaign to just remind governments of, whether it be municipal or provincial, what the state of our roads are and where the attention should be focused on.
Do you have anything at your fingertips there, Brian, about Barrie, Simcoe County, and how things have gone over the years with the survey?
Yeah, with the Worst Roads campaign. So ASA Road tends to be a common one that shows up on our list. But right now, ASA Road is going through a large-scale project where they're putting in an interchange on Highway 400 and adding in six lanes, which is expected to be completed in 2025, which will be good to reduce some of that congestion. We have Lockhart Road in Barrie Innisfil, which made quite a few appearances on our regional list between 2018 and 2022, but came off the list in 2023. So quite a few roads in Barrie. Barrie tends to, have a good presence in terms of the central region and our regional list. But and then we even had a new one, Tiffin Street, which made its debut on our regional list last year, but officially finished its repaving in July of 2023. So we're hoping that road does come off the list for 2024.
And this is the thing, as we alluded to earlier, people will talk to their city councilors or make a deposition to city council about bad roads, and they want things done. But sometimes a little nudge from CAA can help a lot, too.
And so we're seeing, about, according to our research, that 74% of our members are venting about the state of their roads to their, their friends, coworkers, spouse, family, et cetera. And we understand that it's a prominent issue, and that's why we use the results of the campaign, and we encourage as many road users as possible to voice their concerns and nominate and vote for a road so that we can take these results and continue this dialogue with different levels of government in hopes of obtaining more, whether it be more funding or fast-tracking road projects or more dedicated infrastructure funding. The Worst Roads is a great tool for us to influence those decisions on that level.
All right, nuts and bolts of this. How do people voice their opinion and get their voice heard and get things moving?
Everyone can vote on caaworstroads.com from March 27th to April 19th. You'll have your chance to voice your concerns and nominate and vote for a road. And so we encourage everyone to visit caaworstroads.com and have their say.
And when do we get the results?
The results will be revealed near the end of May.
Very good. Brian, thanks for your time, and get ready to be inundated.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on here.
The Barrie Colts snag themselves a playoff spot, but have a tall order ahead of them, meeting the first-place Oshawa Generals in the first round, which begins Friday night in Oshawa. We get a preview of the series from Barrie 360's Will Konkin and Colts writer and broadcaster Gene Pereira.
To get going, what's your initial thoughts on the matchup and just kind of how the Colts got here?
Obviously for Barrie, I think it was a mission accomplished in terms of what the goal they set at the trade deadline. After looking to the future, they wanted to get in the playoffs, and they accomplished that. And I think, obviously that stretch at the end was tough. They had a lot of games, 7 games in 10 days. And I think they were gassed, to be honest with you, and they went through a bit of a tough stretch. But I don't think that takes away from their accomplishments here in the second half of kind of reaching their goal. They were playing some good hockey, and I'm talking to Marty Williamson. I mean, when you finished eighth, you don't get to pick and choose who you play, and you're going to face a pretty good team. And they're certainly facing an outstanding team in the Oshawa Generals. Have won 12 straight here coming into the series to win the conference and get home ice throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. And, when you look at the Generals, again, this is a team that came from ninth at one point in the conference to finish first.
And kind of shifting over to player matchup-wise for the two clubs, maybe start with the goalies. Who are we going to see in net, the face-off?
Yeah, I think with Oshawa, they got a clear number one in Jake Oyster. And, you know, the veteran has been really steady back there for them, and a guy, again, that not necessarily flashy, but, you know, he's just solid, a solid guy back there, provides you with that, and they're definitely going to lean on him heavily as they did in the regular season. For Barry, it's a question mark still. Obviously, Ben West and Sam Hildebrandt went back and forth in the goal. So you kind of wonder who are they going to get the start here in game one? Will they kind of continue that back and forth? One thing coaches don't like to do is kind of, when it comes playoff time, kind of review those matchups and they try to ask those questions. But I expect that we'll see Sam Hildebrandt in game one.
Break down the other matchups for the other positions as well, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the blue line, and this thing with this Oshawa blue line is they're big, big physical, you know, guys like Ben Danford, and of course Connor Punnett, the former Barry Colt captain, who's back there. He's been a big addition for them back there. He's got a big time shot, and I got a feeling that we're going to see a lot of Connor Punnett whenever Bo Jelsman is on the ice. On the other side, he could also, pair. I think another focus for Oshawa will be that second line of Bowden, Ty York, and Riley Patterson. So, you're going to see a lot of line matching back and forth. For the Barry Colts, I think their focus, obviously, is going to be on Callum Ritchie. But, you know, this is a pretty deep offense, from Rohrbeck to Roloffs, Seneca, they come at you a lot of different ways. So I think for Barry, that'll be a key thing, is trying to find his depth. And that's why home ice matters so much with the line matchups. Barry's going to have to find a way to contain an offense that's been really good here down the stretch for the Oshawa Generals.
Mentioned it last time, but the injury bug for the Colts. Who are they missing? Who's banged up right now?
Yeah, a couple of key injuries for Barry, obviously. Zach Weigel went out concussion protocol, and the hopes is that he'll be ready for Friday's opener in Oshawa. And the other one is obviously Ronan Jordan, who got hurt, injured his shoulder, and that remains a question mark going into the playoffs. He sounds like he is doubtful, but with injuries, you kind of get it up to it's kind of game time usually when you figure out just before game time. But I think there's a decent chance that Weigel returns, but the Colts will lose a quality veteran like Jordan if he doesn't start.
Yes, if he doesn't, who are you kind of looking to step in and fill that hole?
Yeah, there are guys who are going to have to step up, especially offensive. Barry, I mean, they've leaned so heavily on that line of Bowden, Patterson, of course, York, and of course, Bo Jelsma, who led them in offense. And, I think that's where guys, Bodie Stewart, I mean, he's a guy that really stands out to me. I think there's so much there. He scored two goals in the final game against Peterborough. And, he's such a physical force there. He's a guy that's not afraid to go to the net. And in the corners, he's going to be a big part of it. Obviously, that line of Bowden, York, a guy like that. And, I think they're going to have to get quality minutes out of their younger guys, too. A guy like Carter Lowe is going to have to provide them some quality minutes, here and there, just to make up with a shortage up front. But, a big thing as well, Will, is the specialty teams. And this is an area that Barry really hurts. They've struggled both on the power play and penalty kill all year. And I thought they kind of turned around both, when Thomas Stewart came from Oshawa in that trade for Punnett. He was he's been such a big factor back there. But they're going to have to be a bit better, capitalize a little bit more on the power play than they have. And their penalty kill will certainly have to be better. But there's no doubt that Thomas Stewart's going to play a huge role in both of those.
Looking at the schedule, first two are in Oshawa Friday and Sunday, then in Barrie on Tuesday, April 2nd, and Thursday, April 4th. We'll break down the first three games next time we chat and tee up game four. Gene, you gotta love playoff hockey. Till next time there, bud.
The best time of the year.
What Barry's Talking About is a weekly podcast featuring the best Barry and Simcoe County have to offer and more. You can get caught up and make it easy to keep up in the future by subscribing to What Barry's Talking About through any podcast distributor. Still to come on What Barry's Talking About, a return to walk-in counseling services in Barrie and finding the funds to expand Sadlin Arena. Now this.
Our community rocks.
It's a well-known fact, blood transfusion saves lives. It's also a well-known fact that the world relies on voluntary unpaid donations to fill the need for blood. The need for blood never ends. Canadian Blood Services in Barrie is calling on you to help save a life. Please consider donating today. Appointments are mandatory and must be booked in advance. Book today at blood.ca, through the Give Blood app, or by calling 1-888-2-DONATE.
Our Community Rocks is brought to you by 400 Chrysler and Barrie Chrysler, winners of the 2022 Pay It Forward Award at the Barrie Business Awards.
Our Community Rocks on Barrie's Rock Station, Rock 95.
This is What Barrie's Talking About from Barrie 360. I'm Dan Blakely. Everyone needs someone to talk to sometime, some more often than others, some with more serious things to talk about. CFS Counseling and Wellbeing on Ann Street South in Barrie has been providing free counseling by appointment, but is bringing back its walk-in program. Clinical Manager Catherine Celia joins Will Conkin with the details.
To start, what is CFS Counseling and Wellbeing? What does it offer for people in the region?
Yeah, so CFS Counseling and Wellbeing is really a charitable agency that provides counseling and psychotherapy to our community, as well as we have various community programs that are centered around well-being, health and well-being.
What is your role then?
So I'm the clinical manager. I manage our clinical team, and our clinical team consists of social workers and psychotherapists.
Switching over to the walk-in counseling, it returns for CFS. When was it removed, and then why was it brought back now?
It was removed during COVID, like so many other things, right? We had to pivot and go online. So we started offering virtual sessions through Zoom. And when we returned in the fall, I guess that was 2021, we kept the Zoom, so we were hybrid, and also still offered in-person services. So we brought that back. But we also started using an online booking platform. And so that platform allowed people to schedule sessions, you know, up to 2 weeks in advance. But what we did find a couple years later is that we were still hearing from clients and other community partners that the walk-in clinic was still very much needed. So we decided to bring it back 1 day a week.
On that, what are the details of it? How often does it operate? You said once a week. If I go, what is the process that I go through when I'm there?
For sure. So it's in the Barrie location. So that's important because we do have three locations. The Barrie is our main one. And it starts at 12. So if people are familiar with the earlier version of the walk-in clinic, it was 12 to 8 with the last appointments starting at 6:45. So basically what happens is you would simply walk in. We're a little different as we got rid of the paperwork. We still have forms, but they're now on an iPad. So we've graduated into the world of technology. You would fill out the forms on the iPad. We do a pretty quick review with our client care coordinator, Vanessa, and then you would be scheduled a session. And, you know, it could be that the session is, you know, within the hour because, you know, you've come early, or it could be later on. You might decide you want to, you know, go home or go run some errands and then come back, kind of thing.
So anyone in Simcoe County and Muskoka can come to it, correct?
Anybody who works and lives in Simcoe County, Muskoka can come to the clinic. It is free. There's no cost. I mean, that's always like the best thing to hear, right? And you don't need a diagnosis. You self-referral, so no referral needed.
And then I saw as well that sessions are available for individuals, couples, families. It's a wide range of options for people.
That's right, yeah.
The other thing I noticed too, it's not a crisis service. I saw that as well.
Yeah, that's right. So if somebody is in immediate crisis where they might be actively suicidal, then yeah, we would just refer to the hospital.
Overall, have you seen a higher volume over the past few years? Like with the pandemic?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Do you want to talk about that a little
Absolutely.
bit?
Absolutely. I mean, The demand is there, obviously, which is why we're trying so desperately to respond to the demand. But I think, you know, all social service agencies would say it across the board that we are seeing a much higher demand, more complex cases, just people really reaching out for help. I think as we, you know, society destigmatizes mental health more, right? We have people reaching out as well because of that. But COVID also took, you know, its toll on a lot of people. Any kind of underlying mental health issues that were there before COVID just got exacerbated as well, right? So the need is definitely there, without a doubt.
Seems like perfect timing for this then.
Yes, absolutely.
And then where can people find more info about CFS and the services that you provide?
Yeah, so they can find it on our website, so www.cfssc.ca. If they're not wanting to attend the actual walk-in clinic, you can still book online through our platform, so they can go to either our website or the number one, door.ca, and then that will also direct them to a session. So people can still access us through the same method before, is scheduling them ahead of time. This is just something that we've added on.
We talked earlier about the Barrie Colts beginning their playoff run Friday night in Oshawa. They will be back at Sadlin Arena next Tuesday and Thursday for games 3 and 4. They're often the only game in town for the arena, other than some trade shows, regular visits by the Harlem Globetrotters, and the odd concert. But the nearly 24-year-old facility is small by today's standards, and its amenities are lacking, meaning the city misses out on some big-ticket events like curling, figure skating, and the Memorial Cup. Ward 7 Councillor Gary Harvey is among the proponents for expanding the arena. He lays out the plan for funding such an expansion for our Ian McLennan.
Gary, you were one that really led the charge to take a look at growing out the Sadlin Arena. You've touched on, you know, the fact that we're missing events, sport, tourism. But City Council recently approved a motion, for lack of a better word, taxing tourists to help pay for the expansion of Barrie's Sadlin Arena. Maybe explain what you envision, how that will work.
Yeah, so the whole principle around this is tourism paying for tourism. And a few other municipalities in the province have actually been ahead of us in increasing the MAT tax from 4 to 6%. And what we forecast is we're going to see more and more municipalities over the next 12 to 24 months doing the same. And this was just one more revenue source that we looked at to be able to accomplish our goals. Because obviously the Sadlin expansion is just one of a few significant capital projects that are being considered by this council right now.
And so 4 to 6%, how much money are we, was it close to $600,000 when it kicks in April 1st to December at the end of this year?
The estimated is somewhere for this year about $550 or so. And then once we get into full calendar years, the additional percent's going to be somewhere between $700,000 and $900,000. And obviously it comes based off, what the room rates are. And in recent years, since the pandemic, we've seen the room rate fees going up. And also too, thankfully, as we're getting out of the pandemic, we're almost getting back to where we were pre-pandemic when it comes to the volume of stays. But where they have really noticed is the business drop-off during the week. You're not seeing the same amount of travel. And obviously now a lot of people are doing a lot more Zoom meetings, whereas Zoom meetings were almost unheard of pre-pandemic.
Now, you had the city had a consultant look at how to grow out the Sadlin Arena, improve upon it. There were six options. What was the one that was recommended, noting that the city hasn't taken any action on it yet, or council hasn't?
Yeah, so this was actually spearheaded by Tourism Barrie, which is another board that I sit on as a councillor. And when Sierra reviewed the building, and obviously this company is very experienced in looking at these local arenas of this size, they did come back with a recommendation, and obviously the recommendation is the most expensive of the options, which would be a full expansion, not only on to the north side of the building, creating a new grand entrance, which is one thing that was actually removed from the arena when it was being built back in 1995, but also to expanding both ends and adding another almost 1,400 seats into the arena.
So $43.5 million, I believe, was the price tag then. Why is it important, you know, citizen? Well, look, we've got affordability issues. We've got things going on in the city that should be prioritized. Why should this be prioritized? Or is it a priority?
It is a priority. But again, yes, there are competing priorities, right, too. And obviously one of the other competing priorities is the downtown market and also a potential downtown theater. And obviously the theater's been the most expensive presentation that we've had, possibly exceeding $100 million. But then, yes, we have a whole other host of issues around the city, and it's all about balancing and being able to accomplish as many of those priorities as possible. And I think under the new mayor, I think he's demonstrated the ability to be able to manage and be able to accomplish as much as possible with the funds that are available. And that's why we're now trying to think a little bit out of the box and start looking at other revenue sources to be able to accomplish what we want to accomplish without actually having to put it on to the taxpayers. And this is one piece of the puzzle that will help us be able to accomplish some expansion, because right now no decisions have been made. But this is one piece to help us do at least some of the expansion to the arena, because one of the highest priorities right now is the facility related to the Colts hockey team themselves. Because if you were to ever take a tour in the lower part where the teams actually work.
Bottom rung.
It might have been state of the art in 1995. Now that we're in 2024, it's not even close when you compare it to the newer arenas. And even when I say newer arena, even an arena that's 10 or 15 years old, yeah. But especially when you look at, let's say, the Oshawa Generals, it's state of the art. And they've got facilities that our people cannot compete with.
Yeah, I mean, when it opened, Sadlin or Barry Molson Center at the time was state of the art. And since then, the city's been leapfrogged by other communities who now are getting other events too. Tell us a bit about how sports tourism can be an economic driver for a community like Barry.
Yeah, you're totally right with that. Because when you look at even like curling is one of the biggest growing sports in the country in the last decade. And we're losing out to large tournaments hosted by Curling Canada to cities like North Bay, let's say. And North Bay's got an arena that's 50 some odd years old. However, it's gone through one or two renovations. And that's where with this particular arena here in Barrie, it's one way to make the arena last for another 20 or 30 years. Because one of the other pieces that the consultant looked at was, what's the cost to build a new arena? And is that a more feasible option opposed to expansion? And with the size of the arena that we would be looking at to be able to build out for the next 30 to 40 years, we were in the neighborhood of $120 to $140 million. And that was a conversation that really wasn't much of a long conversation, because we just couldn't feasibly see how we'd be able to accomplish that without having to put that onto the taxpayer.
I mean, Barry's tried several times the Memorial Cup. That hasn't happened. But have we missed out on things like even a Brier? Like, I think Moose Jaw's going to get next year or something. Like,
yeah, and definitely, like, I mean,
figure skating.
And that's the thing. When you look at Skate Canada and things, when I've spoken with those two organizations, we do have a seating capacity even currently that would service certain programs that they have. And also, too, when you look at the economic impact, Curling Canada, a lot of their tournaments, the economic impact is on average somewhere between 5 and 7 million. When you look at Skate Canada, they really go across the spectrum. And the highest I've ever seen was out of London, and it was $42 million for one of the national Skate Canada competitions at the Labatt Center.
So where does this discussion go now, or, you know, moving forward, if the city's going to move forward?
So it's slowly moving through the process. And obviously the other thing that the city has recently done is identified some city-owned lands that that we can surplus, that we don't necessarily have the need to be holding on to. And through that process, we'll be able to also generate several millions of dollars to be able to accomplish not only this capital expenditure, but other capital expenditures in the future.
And that increase for the tourism tax, it's more than just, is it, how much of that increase, that 2%, is that strictly to top up? Should there be, an improvement to the Saddleton Arena?
So almost all of the 2% will be going into a reserve account for the Saddleton Arena expansion. With the legislation provincially, municipalities have to partner with a local tourism agency. So City of Barrie is partnered with Tourism Barrie. The minimum split has to be 50-50. So half of the money goes to the city, half of the money goes to Tourism Barrie. And just recently at the board, Tourism Barrie has also authorized that 1.75 of their half of the 2% will also be going into this reserve account. And then the other funds that are being kept by Tourism Barrie are going to be used for sports tourism also, to be able to assist in sponsoring and bringing more tournaments to the city. Because even a minor hockey tournament, depending on the size of it, sometimes could actually have an economic impact of almost $1 million in a weekend.
And that's our program for this week. Thanks to Ian and Will for their input, to Matt Ladder for his technical tweaking, and to you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe to What Barrie's Talking About, rate it, review it. You can also keep up with What Barrie's Talking About on X at Barrie360, on our website, barrie360.com, and our daily Kickstart podcast available from any streaming service and on our website. I'm Dan Blakely. Hope you'll join us again next week.